Welcome to the Sample Chapter Podcast, the show where authors read a sample chapter from one of their books. Here's your host, Jason A. Meiske.
Hello, Sample Chapter listeners. We are back. And yes, indeed, it has been a little while, hasn't it? Suffice to say, there has been a lot going on in my world. A lot of family drama in the along the lines of health issues with extended family. I've had my own health issues. Ended up having to have another surgery, but suffice to say, everybody is healthy and good to go now. And I'm really excited to be back doing the show. You know, and it was just one of those things where, until I could really commit the time that I've been giving to this show for the last, 7 years now, this is the 7th year, until I could really commit that time, then I just wasn't going to come back and do anything, you know, half-assed. So, but I'm back now. We've got a really great guest this week with Abigail Morrison. She is going to be introducing us to her debut novel, The Yokney's Eye. And it's a great discussion. We have a lot of fun talking about her other stories. You know, was her first ever story ever going to be something that's going to be come out? You know, will they ever see the light of day? What went into Yokney's Eye and how that was, you know, how she discovered it and wrote it, the planning and pantsing side of it. And, you know, among other things, then we finally wrap it up with a really fun would you rather kind of question. And it's really great. And then, of course, next week, Abby will be back again with the reading of the beginning of Yokney's Eye. So you don't want to miss that. Hey, before I forget, I want to make sure that you click that link in the show notes, because Abby's got a special going on for her book happening right now during Amazon Prime days. And so click that link in the show notes to get on over and grab a copy of her book. You don't want to miss out on that. It sounds like a delightful story, and one that I'm going to probably pick up as well, since it's Prime Day. You know, I mean, got to grab those deals when you can, right? So it's, you know, you're in for a fun treat today with Abby, and it's just we're having a lot of fun. As for me, like I said, it's just been a really hectic few months. It's not one of those things I really need to go into a lot of details or whatever. Just it's just been kind of hectic and frustrating to not be able to do the things I really love. To be perfectly honest with you, I haven't even been able to do a whole lot of writing. I did do a book show with my local writers group. When did we do that? Oh, we did that the first weekend of June, and that was actually right after my surgery. So I was still recovering, but I was able to, you know, I could go and stand there and sell some books and talk to some people. And that was a lot of fun getting to do that. Shared some pictures online. And, otherwise, I mean, I think, oh my goodness, I think I've written maybe two chapters of Bandit 3. I actually did start on another short story that I've got about halfway done. And then I'm doing edits, final edits, on the short story that's coming out in a new anthology later this fall. But, the nice thing about having all this stuff kind of coming to a close, everybody feeling better, and, I feel like my schedule is finally getting back to normal, and I've been feeling that urge. You know what I mean? I mean, as a writer, I know sometimes some of us get that urge where it's like, you know, maybe you don't want to write. Maybe you let life get in the way. You have all these other things. But then you reach that period where it's like you start to feel that need, that desire. It's like, you know, writing is kind of like that drug that, like, man, it calls you back in sometimes. And I've really had that happening to me here lately. So that is something that I've been looking forward to. I'm gonna start making the time again. Yeah, because sometimes that's what you have to do in order to follow through with the things that you're passionate about. You got to make time to do it, right? So that's what I'm going to start doing here lately. You're here in the very near future, perhaps tomorrow. Perhaps when this episode drops, while you all are listening, I'll be working like crazy on getting some more writing done. And you know, the plan is still to have Bandit 3 out this year. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, not a whole lot else to share right now. Perhaps next week before the reading, I'll have some new things. But I think without further ado, we'll go ahead and hop on over to this wonderful, fantastic interview with our guest, Abigail Morrison. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Sample Chapter Podcast. It's been a while, but I am so excited because I have a very awesome guest author with us today. Joining the show is Abigail Morrison. Abigail Morrison is a Wisconsin-based genre and young adult author with over a decade of writing experience. She loves genre-fusing stories that feature grace and redemption, ask questions without necessarily answering them, and point towards possibility. When not writing, she loves dancing, reading, and all things nerdy, and throughout all the indispensable enjoyment of tea. You can find Abigail's home on the web at amorrisonbooks.com, but she is here with us today to discuss writing and her book, her debut novel, Yokne's Eye. Abigail, thank you so much for joining me, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I am excited too. And oh my gosh, what a journey it's been to get this together, to get this to happen. And we were discussing before the show, I think it's been a good 6 months that we, at least 6 months since we've been first talking about doing this.
Yeah. It's been a journey, but you know, good things come to those who wait. So let's hope it's a great episode for you.
I believe it will be. I believe it will be. So give us a little bit about your background. Like what you've been writing for more than 10 years, but what was that that moment that made you say, I want to start writing today?
Sure. Yeah, I think my writer origin story starts in like third grade. I remember getting some feedback from a teacher that was really positive on a short story. And I just, being an attention hound, was like, yes, please pour it down on me. This is perfect. but then more seriously, I think I've always had a love for reading and stories that my mom used to read to me a lot when I was younger. I remember reading books like Redwall and Sabriel in, you know, my elementary years and middle school, and just being like, if I could do this, that's like the one thing that I want to do. And that's really stuck with me. It took me a really long time from that point, obviously, to now having a book out. And so I think a lot of that was it just took me a really long time to learn how to write well and to accept that there were things that I couldn't do on talent alone, and just be willing to kind of write a different one than the one I had focused on for a really long time, to just really learn how to shred things apart and put them back together into something that actually worked as a story. So, and that's what we have with The Yokne's Eye. So it didn't take 10 years to write just that book, but I have been writing for a very long time. Yeah.
So was Yokne your first story, or did you have like lots of other stories in the file cabinet, things that you kind of like, this and a little sample of that, a little sample of this, trying to feel it out?
Sure. Yeah, I have, I think I've written five before this one, something like that. So I had a lot of them. One of them I worked on for about 8 years and then was just like, you are way too emotionally close to this. You need to step back, work on a different one so that you can actually learn some of the finer points of structure and plot and things like that. So I worked on that a lot on this one, but I have some other ones, some of which I would love to come back to someday. Some mm-hmm. of which I'm like, nope, that's not great. And some of it is like, you know, there's pieces of one of them that I'm thinking might just transform into a different story. I think when I started writing consistently, I was in high school. And so there's a lot of my older stuff that's like, this is very clearly written by a high school girl. And it's just, that's not how people work in more reasonable ways. So that translates in pieces that crop up all the time. So nothing ever goes to waste.
That's good. That's fantastic. So do you plan out your stories, or do you pants them? A little bit of both?
Yeah, I have traditionally been a pantser. I tried outlining when I was younger and found that I would just ramble and ramble for thousands of words trying to kind of loop back to the next plot point, and it was very difficult for me. I think now, as I'm trying to look at how I can improve my speed and efficiency to kind of get a more regular publishing schedule, I would love to convert a little bit farther to the plotting camp. And some I'm working on that a little bit. I think if I have the start and the end, I can usually fill in the rest, but I think I'm learning to take more care as I go, just to put a little bit more thought into things so I don't have to spend quite as much time in revisions. But I don't know that I'll ever go full outline. I don't know if I can make that jump.
Yeah, I outlined my first story just way too much. It felt like I'd written it, so it was so hard to go back in and flesh it out. I finally what I ended up writing was almost completely unidentifiable to what my original outlines were.
How
Because I
fun.
just found yeah, it turned out better than I had hoped. But yeah, I finally was just like, all right, I've outlined it so much. I know what I'm supposed to be doing, but I keep getting hung up on like those first 1 to 6 chapters. And I got some critique back, and they were like, people were telling me, like, well, it's not really until chapter 4 that we even really know what's going on or what this is supposed to be. I was like, oh, crap. Yeah, the first 3 chapters are need to go.
Yeah, I
But
get it.
yeah, so I end up, my writing group convinced me to do NaNoWriMo. And I was like, all
Oh,
right,
sure.
I'll just start over with this. And I know what I want to do with it. I know what I have planned, but we'll see how it goes. And that was a thrilling experience to do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's very hard, but it's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. It is. So tell us about Yopni's Eye. What was the origin behind that?
So the Yopni's Eye is a young adult rival champions that are on a journey or race to reach a creature that can change the world when it blinks, but it only blinks once every 600 years. So it's kind of this Hunger Games without the child murderer race to the finish, and then really paired with a lot of more heavier character focus. So I kind of think of it as like kind of Hunger Games meets like friend zone only Pride and Prejudice kind of vibes in a fantasy setting. And so a lot of where that came out of it was just kind of meditating on this idea of what it takes to actually have peace on a larger scale and how you kind of need both sides in order to have peace. So one of the major conflicts in this story is Mira, the main character. She's a female dwarf, 16 years old. Her people have been enslaved for hundreds of years, and she winds up having to travel with Atlan Kearse, who is the prince and heir to basically the slaving empire. He's a big giant dog guy. Love him, big fan. So they end up having to travel together. So obviously there's a lot of tension where obviously he's the heir to this slaving empire and she is a slave. So I wanted to think about not only like how do you address an issue of that scale and magnitude of like an entire race that's been enslaved? It's not just like a personal vendetta, but also looking at it from a slightly different lens than I feel it's often treated. In modern literature that I've read or experienced, because I feel like we live in a culture that is increasingly very much like if we just didn't have this group of people, everything would be fine. Like if this political party didn't exist, if, whatever, if this, lady at Starbucks that's yelling at an employee didn't exist, then like everything would be fine. And that's just like absolutely not true. Because you'll find someone else that you don't like. Like you're never gonna, unless you're the last person, like you're always gonna have somebody that you can find beef with. And so we need something different than, and I find that a lot of specifically young adult stories that are these kind of rebellion stories against this like oppressive overlord force are very much like in that vein of like, well, if we just got rid of President Snow, then we wouldn't have, you know, Hunger Games. It just wouldn't have it happen if we just like got rid of that guy. If we just blow up the Death Star. And there's nothing wrong with those stories. Like, I love a good rebellion story, but I feel like, especially in young adult fiction, when it's in theory, maybe not in practice, but in theory is supposed to be stuff that's marketed for younger, you know, kids to be reading. It's like, I wanted to provide something that was a little different and was like, what if that's not the only option? And exploring whether or not there are other options, and is it justified to just wipe out this group of people that have wronged you? And just meditating on the fact that I think that peace requires two sides. And if you just wipe out the other side, you haven't actually achieved peace. Like, that's kind of the opposite of what you've achieved there. And so focusing on a story that has these two sides where, you know, it's neither character is like entirely good or evil, and just putting them together and seeing what happens. You know, you mentioned in my bio, I like to ask questions without necessarily giving answers. And obviously from this conversation, you can kind of see some of where I lean on this issue. but I did try to approach it in a way that was not like super preachy or too cut and dried, black and white. You know, they both have flaws as characters and both have their own issues. You know, it's kind of where that Pride and Prejudice comes in of Mira is super prejudiced. And Atlan is definitely coming from the pride side of just not understanding her point of view at first and for various reasons. And kind of having to bring them together to see if a better solution can be found.
Yeah, that's pretty cool then. Yeah, I love that. I love what you said about that peace requires two sides. That's very well said and very poignant always. So, well, and you've got some fantastic creatures, you know, with the dwarves and the, I forget what you said, the other guy, the magician dude, but then of course the dogman, the giant dogman. How did that come about? Was that just, were you searching to do something different, or was that something that kind of came to mind as you were writing it?
Yeah, I think Atlan and the bogeys kind of came out of just, I've always loved stories like Redwall and anything that has like a big giant talking animal in it. I'm like there for that. And so I think some of that was just kind of came out of my natural affection for that. I think this was a story where Mira and Atlan came very early as characters. Mira, I tend to write and enjoy male characters a lot. My writers group kind of makes fun of me for it a little bit, actually, because it's so extreme. And so a part of me was like, I want to write a character that is a female for my lead. But I also feel like you rarely see female dwarves in settings. And so their origin story is a little bit different than you would see from, you know, maybe like a Tolkien-esque kind of dwarf origin. So they're kind of weird creatures in of themselves, but that's kind of where she came from. And Atlan was, I think, just came out of my love for big giant dog boys. And then Craven is the magician-y guy you mentioned. So he is an arbiter. So he has contractual magic. And I think he came out of just having this idea for this extremely like one use only magic type, which I think was just really interesting to me to have something that is extremely limited in its scope, and is tied in with some of the wishes that have come from the Yokni in the past. The Yokni is a big giant eyeball on little like bathtub top claw feet kind of things. So that's the wish granting creature. And so that's where his magic comes from. And he also has a dragon, which is delightful.
That's awesome. So is Yokni going to be part of a series, or is this a standalone?
This is going to be a standalone. I've had people want a sequel, but I'm going to disappoint them, I think, at this point. Maybe in the future, who knows?
Yeah. So what is next for you?
I am currently working on my very first series, which is terrifying and complex and very fun at the same time. So this one is more steampunk adjacent, but they don't use steam. They use a different power source mixed with kind of this apocalyptic kind of Cold War sheltering vibe. I've had it compared a little bit to Silo or Wool, which is why I haven't read that or watched it at all, because I don't want to accidentally steal from them. But kind of similar to that, if people are familiar with that one.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. And I noticed too, you on your website, which everybody, we're going to have a link to on the web, on the episode down in the notes. But like, you got your blogs, which a lot of fun things in there. I was reading about Martin Riggs from Lethal Weapon and your love for his type of character, the crazy character, all that. I was really blown away when you were defending Mission Impossible 2, though. I was like, oh my gosh, how could you do that?
It is admittedly bad in some ways, but it's bad in all of the best ways, where it just goes so hard on what it is for when it came out. And I think early 2000s action movies have a very special place in my heart. So mm-hmm. I think even though it's actively has a lot of stuff in it that's just very bad, it's also just so fun. As long as you're not trying to take it seriously. If you're trying to take it seriously, you're going to have a very bad time.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's got its place. It's got its place. It no longer really fits in the series. But I just rewatched the first one recently and I was like,
oh, delightful.
Doesn't really stand, stick with it either. But then again, it's got some fun things in it. It's, fun to look
baby
back
Tom
on.
Cruise. Exactly. He's so young in that one. Yeah. 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 The third one is probably always going to be my favorite, but, the second one is like my non-serious favorite.
Yeah. That third one, that was fantastic. I loved how I almost didn't want to see it. And I can't remember. Oh, I was working at the theater. That's why I saw it. I stepped in and it caught my attention. I was just like, okay, all right. They brought it back around and this is pretty riveting.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Well, we're going to finish up with something fun here. We're going to do a little would you rather, and this is book themed. So would you rather read a book with a cliffhanger or a book with a heartbreaking ending, and why?
Is the assumption that these are standalones, or is there like a future book of the cliffhanger?
Let's say it's standalone.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say a cliffhanger because I am just a baby when it comes to sad things and I don't typically like to watch them. But also because one of my favorite movies of all time, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels by Guy Ritchie, ends on a cliffhanger.
Oh.
It's a very small cliffhanger, but it is a significant one.
Yeah. You know, and those can be a lot of fun too. I was originally going to end my first story as a kind of a cliffhanger where I thought, you know what, people can figure it out. It'll be fine. And my wife was ready to kill me. She was like, no, you're not doing that. We need to know what happens. You know, give us a year down the road. It's like, ah. So everybody's been so thrilled that I did that because the way I wanted to end it was not going to be, it was going to be heartbreaking and a cliffhanger. But,
oh, okay. Wow. Double whammy.
Yeah. It's going to be both. But all right. Well, that's fun. That's awesome then. And great answer. I like that. Well, tell everybody where they can find and follow you.
Yeah. So the best place to go to keep up with me is going to be amorrisonbooks.com, specifically sign up for my newsletter. So you'll get some free short stories for one each for the three main characters in this book when you sign up. So a little bonus content you can't find anywhere else. And then as I come out with more books, I also send out recommendations and things like that. So that's the best place to find me. I don't really do social media. It's my unhappy place. So come join me on the newsletter and then you can talk to me via email. It'd be great.
Fantastic.
The other thing to look into is my book. The ebook version is going to be free on Amazon from the 16th through the 20th of July, 2024. So if you are being a cool kid and listening right as this is coming out, you should snap up your free copy.
Awesome. And like I said, everybody, I'm going to have the links for that in the show notes. So whenever you get done with this, you can hop on over, follow her website, and then also the Amazon links. That way you can grab the books right away as well. So
perfect.
Abby, thank you. Thank you so much, Abby, for your patience as we work this out, and then for being such a wonderful guest with us today.
It has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on and for doing an awesome show.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll make sure and put the check in the mail tomorrow, I promise. All right, everybody. Well, stay tuned for next week when Abby returns and with a sample chapter from The Yoke News Eye. And until then, take care, everybody.